Good afternoon. This is Front Range Outdoors on KGPR. Marty Bannon here with my co-host, Amy Grisak. And you haven't heard a new show for a while. It's been a challenging summer for various reasons, as you all realize, with COVID and restrictions and stuff. But we're back, and we got a great show for you today. But we're going to spend about 5 minutes telling you what we've been up to this summer before we introduce our guest.
This is Amy Grisak, and just wanted to, it's great to be back in the studio with Marty and finally get to talk about what's going on with the trails. But we should probably start by talking about the Montana Trail 406 and what the progress is there.
Well, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but we've made some significant progress. A lot of challenges with COVID, getting out and talking to the right people, but you know, with social media, we've been able to stay in the loop with a lot of folks. And I'm not going to announce the our collaboration, but we're going to announce that soon, probably this week. And it's a large Montana company, which is going to help us formalize the trail and get it out there in a digital format and to the users. But I want to talk about Amy's publishing. And so she's got two books that came out this summer. Amy, why don't you tell us about them?
Well, the first one that we talked about earlier this year was The Nature Guide to Glacier and Waterton Lakes National Parks. And that was with Falcon Publishing, which was a ton of fun to photograph and research and share all the different plants and animals with people who visit the park. And then recently, the book that I've been working on for a while called Found Photos of Yellowstone was published by Riverbend Publishing in Helena. And that was a collaboration with a longtime friend of mine, Michael Francis out of Billings, who has collected historical photos for over 50 years, or about 50 years. And so these are pictures that have been in family photo albums for some century, because we have photos from the 1890s up until the 1940s in this. So worked with historian Lee Whittlesey on that one, and he kept me on the straight and narrow, and it was great because he's a walking encyclopedia. And so it was really neat to research this part of Yellowstone that none of us pretty much living have ever seen, and totally different perspective.
Well, Amy actually wrote that book for her co-host, because, you know, with my limited abilities, I could deal with pictures, and this has got, it's a great picture book of Yellowstone. And it's not Yellowstone, it's Yellowstone history. So there's some pictures in there that'll just really amaze you of what Yellowstone was like back in the day. And you can compare it to what it's like today. And it's significantly different. Same park, significantly different experience that those people back then had in Yellowstone as opposed to today. But we're going to make a little leap from there to our real core subject, which is the Front Range. And today we're going to have a great person that has defined the Front Range and hiking and recreating in the Front Range. So, Amy?
This is true. Anytime somebody talks about hiking or thinks about hiking along the Front Range, they think Tom Kotinski. So welcome, Tom. Thank you for joining us today, and looking forward to talking about your adventures.
Thank you, Amy.
Now, Tom, you worked at the Great Falls Tribune for a long time ago. Before, I was never able to work with you, but tell us how you made your way to Great Falls.
Nearly 50 years ago, I was working for a Chicago, actually it was more than 50 years ago, I was working for a Chicago suburban daily newspaper, and I had met a friend at college at the University of North Dakota, and he was from Great Falls, and we were on the wrestling team there, a fellow by the name of Richie Lucas, who's still around town here, and he talked about how great Great Falls was and the Bob Marshall Wilderness, and so I decided I would take a little trip out here, and I did so, and came through, and while I was here, I thought I'd stop in at the Great Falls Tribune. I met with longtime editors Terry Dwyer and Scotty James and Daz Furlong, and they literally hired me on the spot it was a great surprise. And but I didn't spend much time in Great Falls to begin with, because they sent me to Helena almost immediately to cover the state capitol as a Capitol Bureau reporter, which I did for 8 years, and then returned to Great Falls in 1981 as city editor. And that's really how I got here, through a connection in college and then a vacation trip.
Hey, Tom, I have to ask you this, being a former wrestler, what weight did you wrestle and how'd you do it in North Dakota State? That's a wrestling state, my friend. You must have been a pretty good wrestler.
I wasn't in North Dakota State. I was at University of North Dakota in Grand Forks. And I didn't do very well, but I wrestled, let's see, would have been in those days 137. And Richie Lucas was below me at about 125. And we had one other Great Falls wrestler there, a fellow by the name of Chuck Whitacombe, who wrestled in about 160.
Well, that's wrestling country up there, so you may not thought you were very good, but that's wrestling country. So I'm thinking you were holding your own, although you're probably about 2 pounds heavier now. So you'd have to run in some plastics and do some sucking weight to make weight.
Well, I actually this summer I would have made weight.
I can believe that. Yeah. Now, so Tom, so you mentioned the Bob Marshall. So from the beginning, the wilderness resonated with you.
It did, but I really didn't get a large taste of it until I was working at the Tribune in Helena, and Terry Dwyer called me and said, "Hey, listen, we'd like to send you for a week back into the newly created Scapegoat Wilderness to do a story about this new wilderness area, this citizen-led wilderness area," and they sent me for a week with an outfitter out of Helena, Don Merritt, and his brother Cliff, who was at the time the president of the Wilderness Society. They had both grown up in Helena, and they took me for a week on horseback and hiking. I hiked, and among the trips we did, we went up the Lander's Fork and climbed Red Mountain and climbed Crow Peak back there. And it really gave me a taste of wilderness. And at that point, I was sold.
I think it's phenomenal that you got back there when it was first established as a wilderness. Very cool.
I think I did the first kind of this is what it is type story, on the ground, on a trip, for a daily newspaper. It had been a greatly controversial proposal back in the early 1970s, but I don't think anybody at the Tribune had actually gone back there and had a look, and I had a really good look. I mean, what could be better than climbing Red Mountain?
No kidding.
Which is the high point in the whole Bob Marshall complex.
Yeah, that's Red Mountain still is an awesome climb. Even if you can do the short way up, the back way up, and it's still...
We did Ring Eye Creek then, but over the years I've climbed it 3 or 4 different other ways. There's, all the various ridge lines and walk the ridges, and did it last year, walk through a burn, and it's just a very satisfying climb. There's a large mountain goat herd up there. I'd say I've got photos of 17 animals in just one shot, and actually I've seen that herd several times that I've climbed it.
Yeah, it's an awesome view from across over there on the plateau, above Ring Eye, above mm-hmm. the Forest Service cabin when you get up high, and you can look up there and see the whole mountain itself. It's awesome. Awesome spot. And yeah. it's hard to believe when you talk about the whole Bob Marshall. I think people gloss over that a lot. that the high point in the whole Bob Marshall Wilderness is at 9,000 something feet. When I was just down in Creed, Colorado, hiking in the Wabanuch Wilderness, and the town of Creed is as high as Red Mountain, the town of it. So, and everything's above it. So down there, 12,000 is standard, and then you got all the 14ers. And so a lot of people think the Bob Marshall is like the mountains down in the Madison and Gallatin, and they're high, where the Bob Marshall is not. It's a low mountain wilderness. It's got some really nice peaks, but they're not above 9 something.
Well, but yet you do have some significant elevation gains, and I'm thinking particularly along the Swan Range. If you were to climb particularly Holland Peak, or that's roughly a 4,000 foot elevation gain. And on the east side, climbing Rocky, 3,600 to 4,000 feet doing it, depending on which way you're going up. So those are significant gains in a day hike.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean to say it's just a different environment. You feel, when you're on Red Mountain, you feel the same way as you feel if you're on Mount San Luis above Creed at 14. It looks mm-hmm. the same. And you start higher to climb, and you climb the same amount of altitude. It just, you don't realize when you're on Red Mountain that everything in the Bob is below you at that point. And it's just...
Well, that's really the beautiful part of climbing in the Rocky Mountain front, or hiking in the Rocky Mountain front, is that you are so close to the Great Plains, and you hike through and climb through transition zones going from the plains to the foothills to real alpine country, it's what I think makes the Rocky Mountain front so significant and diverse.
I think Tom, that's a significant point, and I had a question I was going to save for the end of the interview, but I'm going to throw it out here now, and then we're going to transition over to your book you wrote about what we're talking about right now, and you can describe actually the process of writing this book, and actually you probably had to go out and hike all these places. But have you ever considered, when you do the Continental Divide Trail, you drop into the Bob, and you have mountains on both sides, and you spend a lot of time besides the two times that you go up high, but it's not on the front side. You stay down low along the Sun River. Could you walk the, say if you got on the front side of the Marias Pass and stay on the front all the way down to Benchmark, or is that not doable?
Yes, you can. In fact, I'm trying to think, maybe 20 years ago, the Wilderness Association had a hike that basically did that very thing. You can start it at basically at Rogers Pass, which is, I think, kind of the beginning of the east side of the front. There you would basically stay right on the Continental Divide itself, drop into Falls Creek, and I think probably the best way to do it, and in fact, in my book, I've got one of the hikes. I call it the Grand Tour of the Front, which basically goes from Blackleaf Canyon to Clary Coulee on the Teton County Road, and it's about 15 miles. I did it this summer, and it gives you probably the very, very best view of the front that you could possibly get, and it just stays strictly on that east side. But there are also trails that go beyond that on north and south that would pick it up.
Yeah, I always thought when I was doing the Continental Divide Trail, being from Montana in Great Falls, knowing what the front looked like and the views, when we dropped in like at Badger Pass up there into the Sun and walked along the Sun for a large stretch of the Bob, which is pretty amazing. It's beautiful, and there's some great scenery back there. A lot of it was burned or recovering from burns. But when I get out on the front, I'm thinking, boy, if if the trail came down the front side with just the views, you know, just like that section from Rogers Pass to Benchmark until you drop behind Patrol Mountain there, that section, when you're looking east or west, but especially west, and you can stand there and the wind doesn't blow you off the hill, it's just phenomenal view. And I don't think we, a lot of hikers through the Bob, really appreciate the front because they don't see it so much on the Continental Divide Trail.
That's the whole thing. In fact, that's what really drew me to the front was the, you know, trying to get into the Bob. You got to pass through the front on the east side to get into the Bob. And doing that a few times and rushing through the front, I began to think to myself, what am I doing here? The front is much more spectacular. It's more dramatic. It's more diverse. And so I began to really concentrate on the front. And then the way I did it was, you know, not only hiking the trails, but I tried to, you know, pick off every named mountain along the front.
This was all part of when you were creating the Discover the Rocky Mountain Front book, correct?
Well, that book is really a product of writing many years of trips of the week for the Great Falls Tribune.
Okay.
You know, I basically had three jobs while I was there over about a 33-year period, and that was, you know, the Capitol Bureau in Helena for eight of those years, and then city editor for another 14 or 15 years, and then associate editor for 10, 11 years. And what I did was, gosh, when I had any downtime at all at the paper, I would sit down and write a quick trip of the week, you know, recounting what I had done the previous weekend. And over the years, you know, they really mounted up, and I realized, my goodness, at the, you know, when I retired, geez, I've got a book here. And Jim Strauss, who was the publisher at the time, thought so too, and really encouraged me, and that's how the book was written. It was basically an accumulation of the many hikes that I had already reported in the paper.
Now, with these hikes and everything, what are some of your favorites that you've included in the book?
That's like asking which of my kids
I know.
I would have to say that, gosh, we did so many interesting ones. Probably the simplest, most scenic, gosh, has to be probably Headquarters Pass.
That is a good one.
I think you get your, you know, biggest bang for the buck there. I mean, you've got alpine scenery. You go up high. You almost certainly bump into mountain goats. And then you can see the Chinese Wall from the pass itself. It kind of gives you entree to that. But just in terms of my favorites, before they burned, I was really concentrating on the Badger 2-Med, particularly in the Scarface, Morning Star, and Mount Poya area, setting up, you know, various traverses and routes along those mountain peaks, going up Birch Creek out of Swift Reservoir. Those are awfully nice there, too.
I like that you included such a diversity, too, of some easier hikes that more inexperienced people can do, or younger people or older people can do, and then also some really good challenges as well.
Well, the book also has what you could do with kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is good.
It's a very important thing.
It is. You have to get them hooked early.
Well, Tom, your book
It's something a family can do.
Your book made it easier for me because I collected the Thursday edition of the outdoor section of the Tribune, and I still have them. And I was looking through them because, you know, when I'm looking for ideas to something to do, that Thursday section, that outdoor section, always had your stories in it. And just so I've got boxes of those that my wife keeps saying, get rid of those. But I was looking through it the other day, and I saw a picture of you with Wayne up on at Man Gulch. You guys had done a hike up there, and there was a picture. I don't know how old it was, but it, you know, it's just going through the outdoor section of the Thursday paper back in the day was where I got all my ideas of where to go, what to try next.
Well, those things were fun to write, but that was, you know, really just a sideline. That was not my, I think a lot of people associate me at the paper with those, but I was really more of an administrator as an editor. And this was just the fun part of that job, something that I could do, like I said, when I had a few moments of time.
Well, we know
very
you have
rewarding,
a...
Very rewarding.
Well, we appreciated it, and we're all nodding our head here. But we know you have some, you got some time on your hands, and so you're working on some other stuff. And so what can you tell us about what you're working on and what we're looking at and any timelines you got for that project?
Well, again, what happens when you write, and I'm sure Amy knows this, is as you... If you do something, you write it down right away, and eventually it starts accumulating, and it's obvious that you're going to probably have a book on your hands. I've been picking away at the Little Belts for, well, almost 50 years now. I think some people don't recognize the fact that that's a mountain range the size of Glacier Park. It's 1 million acres. And it just has resources of, you know, immense interest and value. And, you know, it's a low-slung mountain range, so it you know, it's something that's an acquired taste as opposed to the front, which just knocks you over the head.
But there's some really good views. You get some really good views in the Little Belts.
You can get some really good views. But what ended up happening was 17 years ago I started a blog. And I'd write these things down and post them in my blog called Out There with Tom. And, gosh, I've got over 900 posts in there now from 900 hikes just over the last 17 years. I wish I'd done this starting 50 years ago. And I began to realize, my gosh, I've got a book here. And what I've done is I've begun, you know, putting them together. I've basically got it online, but password protected at this point. But I'm thinking that I may just post it sort of as a gift to the community. I'm not sure about that yet. But I've got 41 hikes that I've written in the Little Belts and quite a few other, you know, waterfalls and trips and you know, the Smith River and the sluice boxes and, you know, the camping and everything. So I'm just sort of putting it together. I'm not sure quite how to get it out. It's so large, it's hard to get your arms around. But that's a project that I would say I'm about maybe one season away. I would have gotten out there this year, but a combination of smoke, heat, and COVID kept me from completing the task.
Yeah, that was a tough trifecta this year. But I'm looking forward to that. Your blog is terrific. Anytime I'm researching a trail or a project, I go to your blog and see, because there's so many times that you've done it multiple times. So it's a different perspective each time, which is great. So, no, that's a valuable resource. And I am looking forward to when you're pulling this together for the Little Belts. Because like you said, it's undervalued.
Well, it's undervalued, and trying to organize it has been really difficult. The front, when I did that book, I organized it by access points.
Yes.
You know, that was easy. You know, you've got a road up into an area, you've got an access point. I tried doing that a bit with this, but I've also looked at ranger districts because they're, what, the two main ranger districts, and then you've got the sub-districts. But that doesn't quite work either. So, And I'm still fooling with it.
Okay, because there's a lot of different access points to some of these places, isn't there?
There is, and one of the other things that's a little tougher with this is that the front is not as heavily roaded. And then you've got the RVs and the ORVs that are the trails are being converted to. So you've got to have a tolerance for roading. Now, one of the things in talking about all this is that to let people know that don't ignore winter. The Little Belts themselves are spectacular in the winter. This is probably, and if you confine yourself to the three designated areas in the Little Belts running along the US 89 corridor, you're really confining yourself and making a mistake, because particularly with snowshoes now, there are many areas that if you just plan it, you can go and do it. You have to be a little adventuresome, but it's worth doing. And then for skiing, I'm an old three-pin binding Telemark skiing cross-country skier, backcountry skier. But the backcountry is being opened up to people who are now shifting to the all-terrain gear for those people who are adept at downhill can now get on cross-country skis and with their heels locked down for the more difficult runs. And so I think it's opening up a whole lot more country, but I'm finding I'm seeing fewer and fewer people in the backcountry.
During the wintertime?
I'm not sure.
Only during the wintertime or overall?
Wintertime. Well, I don't see a whole lot of people in the backcountry in the Little Belts period.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
I think your observations are right on, Tom. I actually think it's maybe a bigger issue that a smaller and smaller group of people appreciate the wilderness more and more, because it takes, as you know, you've done it for 50 years, so you understand it's not something that you drive your four-wheel drive to and then do a little, you know, eighth of a mile hike, and you've seen it. It's not National Park, and so and I hope we never get to that. And we have some, and you're aware of them. There's a couple of them in the Belts, wilderness steady areas that are, you know, managed as wilderness steady areas, and so they're incredible. The Middle Fork, unless you really want to hike down in there. I know you can come up, you can drive up it, but like the Lost Fork and the West Fork of, those just awesome areas. And, I was really interested to hear when you said the Belts were as big as, the park, the whole thing. And so, there's huge areas there. You could probably hike your whole lifetime in the Belts and not see all the, you know, every time I hike through it, I see another point that I'm saying that would be really interesting to go up that drainage right there and see where that goes to. And so I was a little disappointed. I happened to be hiking through there during the beginning of archery season, and there was a lot of vehicles in there. But as soon as you get off those main roads, and I'm sure when winter hits, there are still a lot, like you said, a lot of places you can go, and you won't see anybody.
Well, as long as I've got you, there are a couple, two areas in the Little Belt that I would highly recommend people going to. And I think that in Great Falls, we've made a mistake not promoting the just getting up Big Baldy and walking that ridgeline and looking down into the lakes, those alpine lakes up there. I don't think people realize there's three very visible alpine lakes off that ridgeline. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is that there's an incredible access site out of Geyser, and it's called the Lone Tree Road. And that will take you into some really beautiful off-trail country. And there's a gorgeous butte back there called Wolf Butte. And it would surprise people to see these boulders as big as houses standing on end that you negotiate to getting to the top of this thing. It's not a very difficult thing to climb, but very, very worthwhile. And it's got some minor rock finding challenges.
Well, Tom, it looks like we are about out of time, even though I think we could probably talk all afternoon. But I wanted to thank you for joining us once again and really recommend your book to anybody. I consider it the Bible of the front and look forward to your next one on the Little Belts. Thank you, everybody. This is Front Range Outdoors with Marty Bannon and Amy Grisak on KGPR Great Falls.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, guys. I had fun.